Hi there, and welcome to Putting the Squid to Bed, a podcast about creative people and their craft. My name is Tim Lenko. I'm a writer and performer, and on this podcast, I interview creative people about why they create things and how they go about it. The show is named after an image that I have found so helpful. If you're anything like me, you know those moments when you've nearly finished a project, but then you find another touch you could add, another loose end to tie off, or another rough patch that needs ironing out. It's like trying to tuck a squid into bed. Just when you get two or three arms under the covers, another four or five have popped back out. Projects are rarely finished so much as they are surrendered. And that journey of discovery, creation, and surrender is what I ask my guests about. Hello and welcome to episode 14 of Putting the Squid to Bed. In case we haven't met, hi, I'm Tim. It's fun to be a few episodes into season two and sharing the conversations that I've been gathering and having with people. Those have been along for the ride. No, the first couple of episodes this season, I've sat down with one old friend and one new friend, and I'm excited today to be sitting down with another old friend, someone who I have actually gotten to work on creative stuff with. So by way of introduction, my guest today is an illustrator from Manitoba. She, though visual art is not her only medium, she sings, writes, teaches, and is a multi-instrumentalist. She's illustrated for numerous publications and projects from around the world and is currently neck deep in writing and illustrating her own first graphic novel. Yes. Please welcome into your ears, Kyla Weeb.
Hello.
Kyla, it's so good to have you.
Thanks.
Where are you calling in from today?
I'm calling in from rural Manitoba, kind of near McGregor, in a house in the countryside. Yeah.
Wonderful. So is it a snowscape where you are?
Well, not as much as I would like, because ever since the big snowfall of 1997, when I was five, I have always expected every winter to have about 5 feet of snow, and the average, like, 3 or 4 inches that I've had since then has always been a bit disappointing.
Oh, no kidding. Oh, that makes sense. Yeah, core memories developed under this Christmas card picture.
Yeah.
And then everything else is compared to it.
Mm-hmm.
Huh. It's interesting to think about, like, how that compares. Look at me being an artist and actually just like making something more than it is. Seeing the contrast and the disappointment of expectations is fodder for art in itself.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
And also returning to childhood, a lot of it, like just kind of getting yourself back into what it felt like to be a kid.
No
so
kidding.
Child Kyla wants big snow, and, I'll just let her want that, and adult Kyla will be disappointed alongside her.
That makes a lot of sense. Oh, I'm so excited for your graphic novel because I know that you dig into themes sort of related to that.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
Do you want to say anything about the graphic novel you're working on?
Yeah, sure. I was actually just working on, working on the writing part of it right now. Mm-hmm. And was working on the script this morning even. It's kind of like an homage to younger Kyla in a way. Mm-hmm. It's called Journey of Faith, and it's based on a book that I wrote when I was 11 that was called Journey of Faith.
Okay.
So that's, that's what it's about. And it is about the act of stepping out in faith when you create something. Because to step out in faith is to step out into the darkness and take a risk, risking potentially people hating what you do or laughing at you or whatever.
Yeah.
And or it not even finding an audience. Like, that's kind of the scary risks of making something.
Yeah.
So the premise of the story is that there's an 11-year-old girl who's written a story for a school assignment called Journey of Faith. Mm-hmm. And she presents this story to her family around the dinner table. She is completely confident that her book is the best and most wonderful thing that's ever been made, ever. and does not need any edits or any constructive criticism or anything. Yeah. But her older sister has just had, she's developed a bit of a more of a cynical attitude towards creation since she's had some embarrassing moments of writing something and then having the audience laugh at her. Mm-hmm. So she takes out her own embarrassment about herself on her younger sister and invades the story with all of her helpful suggestions, which causes conflict. So in a way, the story world starts off with one creator and then is invaded by another creator. And there's this like clash of creators within the world of the story. And in the end, it's about the two sisters becoming reconciled, and it impacts the story that she writes along the way. So that's kind of what it's about.
Yeah. So you've got that first world where they're at the dinner table, and then you've got the secondary world where each of them are narrating different stuff into, and then the different characters or plot points that are narrated into it are all in conflict until it's resolved. Okay.
Yeah, the main conflict is the younger girl wants to write like an allegorical drama. It's very serious. But the older sister is very much more into jokes and witty repartee.
Okay.
So when she invades the story, a new version of the main character invades and starts like causing scenes and flirting with boys. And the original main character is like, what is going on here? I was supposed to be crying and now you're just being funny all the time. Huh. And it just ruins everything. So that's how it kind of manifests within the world.
That's neat. That's a nifty idea. How did that notion come to you and what made you think this is one to explore? I want to dive in and develop this.
That's a really good question. I have wanted to do something with that original story that I wrote. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, honestly, it's just a kid's story. Like I like it cause it's charming and young and from my past and stuff, but that doesn't make it a good story necessarily. But
carry on.
Oh yeah. So like, it's just, you know, an 11-year-old's story. But when I've tried rewriting just that story by itself, it's always turned out like overly dark and kind of overworked and it loses the charm that I liked because I put all of my older person perspective onto it. Hmm. And then at some point the real reason that I've decided to do this story is a couple years ago, I was praying and I was asking God, like, what do you want me to do? And then I felt that as I was asking him, he kind of revealed to me, I suppose, that in my art, I haven't been taking very many big steps of faith. Huh. I'd only been doing commissions or art for fun, both of which are fairly safe because my heart isn't tied to it. So I felt that he was saying, do something that matters to you, that's actually from your heart, like commit yourself to this. And then I would have a few stories that I was thinking about, but I thought as I was thinking about why I haven't actually taken that step of faith, I realized that I've actually been quite afraid. And when I was younger, I wasn't afraid. So I kind of wanted to explore my own fear of making something and failing through writing a story about a girl who's afraid of making something and failing and then channeling that into criticism. Because I personally find it much easier to criticize other people's work than make something that I actually like myself.
Right.
So
you were working on this project and then you were recognizing the fear around the project and that fear ended up being a part of the story in the project itself and actually brought the thing to life.
Yeah. Yeah, originally it was going to be the little girl sharing the story with her very supportive, bland, characterless older sister. And then all of a sudden I realized, like, wait, no, this is like young version of me telling the story to older me. And then just the conflict between the two. So it is very self-referential. I recognize that is a thing, but this is my first story, and I'm just gonna let myself do that. So
do it. Absolutely.
But like, I do, like, I want to be vulnerable and like show something about, like, real about myself, which you can do without making a character that's based on yourself. But that's kind of where I'm starting off anyway.
Yeah. That sounds great. The, and then from there, you'll just keep growing your skills and everything will be all along the slider, all along the spectrum of autobiographical and self-referential, all housed within imagination of varying degrees that empathetically draws in facets of the types of people you see around you. And so it'll all be different. Yeah. But you got to start somewhere and you got to grow from somewhere. I love that. Going back really early into your life and being creative, I'm interested, where did you first discover that you liked drawing and making stories? What were the big moments that brought this all up for you?
That's a good question. I think I'm one of those people that's always been an artist and always liked drawing and stuff. Mm-hmm. I'm very thankful that I still have a lot of my sketchbooks and that kind of thing from when I was a child.
Oh, great.
'Cause I actually do have a first illustration preserved that my mom kept. Cool. And it was of a butterfly that we had caught that I named Mona. Oh. And then mom's always like, Kyla was a better artist than me when she was 3 years old. Aww. She always says that all the time. Yeah. So I guess that means I've always been drawing. But I think that probably I really wanted, I really had like active fantasies of what I wanted my life to be like. And then I would illustrate that. So I would draw a picture of me, on a big pile of gold, wearing like a big crown and stuff. 'Cause that would be cool. And I would draw my future children, which, when I was in elementary school were two sets of twins. The first ones being blonde and pale skinned. And then the next ones having dark curly hair and brown skin, and only a year apart so that they could all be four best friends. And I thought that was a great idea. Aww. And then me drawing my, like, it was a lot of like, I guess, wish fulfillment type of art, which is fantasy in, and that kind of thing. And I think that that's like, it's kind of where it all started, was creating worlds for myself that I liked. 'Cause that's what I liked when I would read. And then I wanted to make that for myself too, by creating characters that I thought were beautiful or interesting, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
I also had a very active, like, and well-established imaginary world that I kind of created and lived in when I was a kid. Like, I had my established villains, the giant grasshoppers, which I would frequently spar with.
Oh, interesting. With fencing.
Yeah.
Fencing.
And, and I had an imaginary twin sister who was just like me but had purple hair. So basically this is kind of like my origin story as a creator. It's just like wanting more magic in the world and making it, I guess.
That's really, really cool. I find it so interesting that, like, as you talk through this origin story, it's wish fulfillment, it's fantasy. When you talked about the fear associated with creating something, it was about criticism from others and people not liking what you've made. So it's so interesting, there's this battle of like what the deepest desires in your heart and the desire and how it would match up with the desires of other people, what they want to see. How have you navigated from that early time, and you know, the persisting imagination and what's inside of you, moving forward and negotiating both of those things, the desires and the imaginations and the fantasies that are inside you, and the attempt to create something that will actually appeal to other people as well, and whether you've felt any conflict between it, whether you felt any clear harmony between it. What's that been like? I just find that contrast interesting to notice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I suppose kind of a time when it sort of linked together in my career, just like how other people feel about my art and what I want from my art, was when I did start getting hired for children's books.
Yeah.
I guess there was the fear of the unknown because I had never done it before. But it occurred to me while I was doing it is that I actually also do really love drawing out somebody else's inner world and bringing it to life for them if they don't have the skills to do so, like the artistic skills. So
A good many of us do not.
It takes a while to to develop. Yeah. So, for example, like my first client in my official illustration capacity was my aunt, who wanted to make a memorial book about her son who had passed away when he was a teenager, but in a children's book format, partially as a creative way to remember him and to memorialize him, I suppose, but also as a way to raise awareness and funds for cancer care. And she had the stories, but she had no visual vision for what she wanted it to be. And then that's where I came in. There were definitely a few times when my imagination of what he should look like caused a little bit of like minor conflict. Like I remember him as a really chubby kid. And okay. She's like, Kyla, he's not fat. And I'm like, I'm so sorry. my poor aunt. And like, this is my cousin. And it's a lot of emotions. And so it is scary, like just trying to like get the right look going. But in the end, learning how to dialogue with somebody definitely helped overcome some of those initial problems.
No,
I'm not sure if that totally answers the question. But I think that like when it comes to fear, I kind of have avoided the fear by not actually putting my own thing out there for a long time, just kind of keeping it to myself. So that would be that.
Hence this leap of faith.
Mm-hmm. The first journey of faith.
Yeah.
Of this kind.
That's really cool. But I can see how it has been led up to by other leaps of faith like that, where you are interacting with someone else about something that's so important to them, and where, you know, your heart is involved there too, because it's your cousin, and then you're dialoguing over the really difficult components of where some conflict might arise in developing it in a way that it's going to honor the subject and actually serve the audience that it's made for. His mother, your family. There's steps of those faith leaps.
Yeah. Also, one time when she was part of one of the stories, I did some concept sketches of her. I don't know if you've ever been drawn by somebody before. But it's a little awkward. Uh-huh. A little, because you really start thinking about, what do I look like? Like, am I weird? And I found a bunch of pictures that, like, of a time that I remember her from, where her hair was a certain way, it kind of flipped up.
Yeah.
And she was like, Kyla, my hair has never looked like that. And I was like, actually, no. And then I showed her all my photo reference, and she was so embarrassed because she didn't remember that hairstyle.
Oh, yeah. Anyway, that's so funny.
Very tender kind of thing is when you're drawing somebody real and then they're like,
Totally. Yeah. My one memory of being drawn was by a friend who draws for the love of it. Draws and paints. She loves watercolor. And we were just hanging out, you know, all drinking wine, eating sourdough bread that they'd made. And she was like, do you mind if I draw you while we just like sit? And I'm like, go for it. And she's like, okay, you just have to hold a little bit still while we visit. And at the end of it, I was excited to see, but then my hairline was so much further back than I thought it was. And I was like, oh, is that how my hairline looks? Okay. So I know exactly what you're talking about.
And I've been there too, because one time I was teaching a life drawing class, but we didn't have any models. So I was the model and the teacher.
Okay.
Which was a horrible idea.
That's a terrible idea.
I had to stand there and be drawn. Uh-huh. And then I go around and look at all these really, like, they're just amateurs, you know? And
totally.
And okay, so here's how I hope my body looks. And right. then here's how all of them
they
grew. Like
rendered
my hips were just like a ship at sea. And
oh
I had
gosh.
To be like, oh, you certainly did draw me. I can tell that's me, I guess. Hey, never doing that again.
No, that
be
makes
warned,
sense.
Audience. Don't
you live
be the
learn.
Model and the teacher.
Wisdom to take to the bank. That's the clip that should go on Instagram. Okay, so amongst all of the trials and errors and learning and figuring out what is best in your teaching, but your own private creation of stuff, whether you're doing a commission or whether you're working on your own stuff, I'm interested in what your process is like. How do you, for example, manage the ideas that bubble up and like, do you keep a list? How then do you decide what idea is ripe for attention? Maybe start there. How do you negotiate this very active imagination you've got and the ideas that probably all bubble up and then decide what to work on? And then we can get into the process that you actually go through when developing something.
It's a great question. I think like throughout the years, I've compiled a lot of kind of sketches, like either writing sketches or drawing sketches. And a lot of them are just sort of like in these little collections of files, just awaiting mm-hmm. reality.
And where do you keep those files? Are they a binder? Are they a folder of digital art?
Yeah, they're on, I have a hard drive with my, like I organize all my art by year.
Oh yeah.
And then I have all the, and then inside the year I organize them by project. And then if a project moves into another year, I just move it into that upcoming year. So I have some that stay in 2009 and some that have kind of, I kind of keep them visible by putting them in the present year.
Yeah.
And so I think, at least for this project, I had some, well, so some of them haven't been made yet because I don't consider myself to have enough skill to deal with them yet. Hmm. So the reason why I wanted to start with Journey of Faith was I knew how long it would be and it seemed like a good starting off point because of the content, because it seemed appropriate for the time of life that I'm in right now. And I can, so in that way, it just kind of felt right. So that's a horrible answer. Because it's not
horrible at all.
It's not like easy to define. But it seemed like the right the right size and the right mood for this year. Because I want to, my whole thinking is I want to take steps of faith. That is, and then I want that to be what this is about. And also, this is a story that I already know the beginning, middle, and end, so I can make it a normal graphic novel length and then plan it out accordingly, that kind of thing. So trying to be, I think that's kind of the practical side of that.
Yeah.
And I think that it will be an accessible enough story that people will like it. And then I might be able to move on to a more ambitious one later.
Yeah, I can relate to that process wholeheartedly. That's basically what happened with my my middle grade novel that I wrote. I have this note in my phone with like dozens of ideas all in a row. And I got to the point during the pandemic where I was like, I must finish. I'd started so many novels and I was like, I must finish one. I must finish one this year.
Exactly. Got to finish one.
Yeah. And so I chose the middle grade novel story that I had because A, I loved it. B, it was small enough in size that I was like, I think I have the skills to finish this. Also, it's like, you know, within grasp. It's not as sprawling as some of these other longer stories. Mm. And so it's, even if it's a little bit beyond me, I can grow into it. And it is something that I feel confident enough that people will latch onto and like and get. It's a good place to start.
Mm-hmm.
So I very much relate to what you're saying. And then it's interesting to hear, you know, some of my thoughts and feelings mirrored in what you said, where it's like, all right, I think that these projects must sit on the shelf because I don't have the skills for them just yet.
Mm-hmm.
I feel that same thing with some of the projects. And it's interesting to think about how do we know we've grown and gotten the skills that we need to tackle this versus how do we know when to just take a leap of faith and dive in and trust mm-hmm. that we will develop the skills and grow through the creation of the process. And then, you know, as we write, as we draw, then we can grow and live up to what the project actually is.
Mm-hmm.
I'm assuming that's been something that's on your mind. Have you been chewing on that?
Yeah. Yeah. And then beyond that, kind of realizing if I don't start with something now,
yeah.
I may die with never have done any of these things that are like that actually really matter to me and that I care about. And that would be, like the worst thing ever. And just realizing how long art takes
mm-hmm.
And realizing I need to give myself an ample time to be able to actually accomplish these things that matter to me. And if I don't start now, then I will run out of time because I don't know when I'll die. And then mm-hmm. I want to be able to say that I actually made something that was from my heart and offered it to the world.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. Well, I'm glad that you're doing it. And so now being in the midst of doing it, what does the process look like? Are you I must work on it this time of day, this many days a week? Are you I'm going to work on it when I feel like it? Do you go in with outlines? Do you go in with just like the freedom to like, I'm just going to freeform throw what I think needs to be here down, or I'm just going to explore as it goes? How is that process look for you?
Well, so far I realize if I don't say I will do this many hours a day, it will never happen. So I've kind of decided that I'm going to try to give it between 2 and 4 hours a day. Other projects, depending, like if I have other deadlines and stuff.
Yep.
And then that'll just be how I whittle away. And that'll also be how I realize how long I take on things. And I'll be able to eventually anticipate posting deadlines, because I'm hoping to post it online and do the webcomic thing, because I love webcomics. So
yeah.
And then so there's the time expenditure part of it. I started off, I think that I'm a person who needs to know the entire arc at the beginning. Like I know some people are able to write stories kind of without knowing where they're going. And I just can't do it. So I'm going to write the whole script. I first started off with, I can't remember what the app is called. I'm just going to look at my apps for a second.
For sure.
I think it's called Freeform.
And this is an app that helps you organize all of your stuff. Does it organize it in cards, or does it organize it in like a, web document, or sorry, a word processing document form?
No, it's just it's a new Apple app, and it's mm-hmm. kind of like a mood board project sharing app. So it's just a big grid or a graph paper type thing. Yeah. And then you can add words or boxes or images or whatever. So I made a little timeline. Well, first I made a hero's journey plan.
Yeah.
And then I made a actual timeline after I sort of hero's journeyed it all the way through. And then I started writing. Once I had that big structure, I started writing. And then that brought up like problems that needed to be solved. Like, oh, actually, I don't know how to get from point A to point C. Like, what is the point B that needs to exist there? And then that's changed the timeline a little bit and that kind of thing. For example, how to get older sister's invasion into little sister's story in a way that actually is fun and makes sense and doesn't confuse the reader. That's been one of my big problems that I need to solve. And then, so now that I'm writing the script, and I'm trying to write it like in a script format, that's kind of been my strategy.
Cool.
Seems like not very many people do that. So maybe once I'm better at this, I'll do something different, but whatever. I am also at the same time trying to do a bunch of concept art and figure out how do I draw. and realizing I have no idea. I've never drawn before in my life, and I have no idea what I'm doing.
That's how it feels when you're into something new and frightening, hey?
Yeah.
Oh, that makes sense. Mm-hmm. I'm so interested in how working with the hero's journey worked for you. Like, some people will push back against those archetypes and those, you know, a three act structure or, you know, whatever it is. Did you find that your story naturally fit the shape of a hero's journey, or that the hero's journey informed where there might be gaps? Or did you find that the hero's journey had to bend in order to actually fit your story, or that, you had to break anything in order for things to actually work? How did that go for you?
Oh man, it was so interesting. My very first step was to transcribe my original 11-year-old story.
Yep.
And then it did happen to fit the hero's journey really well, if not kind of timed poorly. Like, at the end, she just all of a sudden realizes, all I had to do was believe. And then that was how the story ended. Uh-huh. It wasn't great, but like all the rest really fit pretty well. Like there was a good beginning, middle, end conflict thing. And then, and then sometimes I didn't really get it. Like the hero's journey steps very well, cause some of them are kind of nebulous. So I was like reading about it a lot and that kind of thing. Like, what is the cave and what actually has to happen in the cave? That's one of the steps. Mm-hmm. So, but through thinking through that did help me think through my story, and then basically landed on like where does each character start and how should they end, and what needs to happen for them to become like transformed from prideful young person to mature, humble child who will hear things, or fearful teenager to maybe I will create again.
Yeah. And
maybe my audience was just the wrong audience. It was the boys she had a crush on. This is based distinctly on a memory of mine when I gave my crush a Valentine in grade 3 and he literally ripped it up in my face.
No. Oh, that's mortifying.
So sad. Still just in pain about that.
Well, yeah, you're writing a whole graphic novel about it.
Yeah. Make art from your pain.
Oh, that's too real. But as you've used that hero's journey, it's been less of a stencil that forces you to create certain shapes and more of like a guidebook showing you here's the lay of the land and here's a hike you could take.
Yeah, I would say so. I did use the Fabula writing cards. Those are actual cards you can get. I admit I took screenshots of them from their website and printed them out myself, which is illegal. You all can know that now. I did not purchase them. I made them.
Well, as soon as they hear this, they'll probably hear this at the same time as your graphic novel becoming a bestseller. And so then they'll come chasing you down for it.
Yeah. I did like the resource though. I will promote the Fabula writing cards to people.
But you won't pay for it.
No. They were like, it was like $50. I don't need that. I just type it out myself.
Oh, I'm sure that the Fabula creators are just going to find your web novel and screenshot it rather than pay for it.
Yeah, they can. It's just fair.
It sounds like a fair exchange at this point. Oh, man. So in your process, whether it's this graphic novel or commissions that you're making or other things that you're doing, what are the biggest obstacles that you find you face time and again? And have there been things that you found actually help?
Yes. Okay. I would say biggest obstacles. I think one big obstacle or one big challenge has been overcoming just my own ignorance about how long things take, or like just sort of a good use of my own time and my client's time, which has been overcome through doing. Mm-hmm. And probably the best thing that's helped me with using my time properly is I've started documenting all of my hours and being really trying to be really structured with my own schedule and being like a manager. So that's been good. Like, just my own procrastination and laziness has been an obstacle to overcome. But if I have everything written down in a document, then I can be like, oh, so I just need to, I'm going to spend 1 hour doing concept art for this one. And then I know that I just have to keep going until the hour is done or whatever.
Yeah.
And that's been absolutely like life changing, actually, just having usable data for my own process to, like, I know exactly how I spend my time and how many hours I spend on everything because I've put it all into a document.
Yeah.
And I use, and my brother is an accountant type guy on the farm.
Yeah. Yep.
So he's helped me make my charts very sophisticated.
Oh, that's great.
Pivot tables and everything. It's just amazing.
Wow.
And then, so that's like one of the boring parts of the creative process, but it has actually been really helpful. And then another thing would just be kind of like the unknown, like there's the blank canvas, not really knowing like, how am I going to illustrate this idea well? And it's actually pretty hard to get something from your mind onto the paper.
Yeah.
And I'd say probably the most helpful thing with my clients and by myself is just taking some time to do some thumbnailing and like really quick, small sketches.
Yeah.
And especially for when I'm working with people, like if I ask them, what do you want? Usually they don't know.
Yeah.
If I draw one thing, they'll be like, yeah, that's probably good. But they don't really know. But if I draw like four versions of something, then that actually helps them understand, oh, okay, I actually like it when you're looking up at the tree rather than looking down at the tree because it feels different and I like that. And then that's been a way to open up brainstorming. Brainstorming is huge and takes quite a lot of work before you can even start making the real thing is just talking around all the ideas and being like, well, what if they looked like this?
Yeah.
I'm really fighting for dads with big round noses. So far, none of my clients have liked any of the dads with big round noses that I have put forth. They all want small triangular noses. And I'm like, someday I'll brainstorm that to someone and they'll be like, that's such a friendly nose. And I'll be like, yes.
Yes.
That's
yes,
what I'm saying.
I love that. Oh, that's so great. And that's the kind of thing that's like a charming signature that one might recognize in an artist's work when it becomes, you know, beloved widely and proliferated and then studied.
Yeah. Kyle is the one with the big round nose character.
The big round noses.
That's what I'll be known for.
Yeah. I love that. Oh, that's so good. What you're saying about brainstorming and being able to talk through the different options that are available because of the different feelings, et cetera, and whatever, what you're describing in showing them different options is educating people on what kind of vocabulary is available to talk it through, what mm-hmm. kind of images and words are actually available to them. Because like you said earlier, not everyone has the visual artistic skills to actually bring to life what's in their imagination or in their heart. And so then to show them, here's options, here's a palette, mm-hmm. or here's, like I said, a vocabulary. And then the other thing that's operant in that is the variety of visual imaginations that are actually available to human beings. Like, I don't know if you've heard those conversations about, like, you know, there's folks who can, all along a spectrum, on one end, visualize a fully formed, beautiful red apple. And then you know, some might see just the shape of it. Some might see a grayscale, like, you know, just or all the way to the other end where they can't picture anything when they close their minds.
Mm-hmm.
They know the word and the idea, but mm-hmm. in order to actually picture something, their eyes have to be taking in visual data for their brain to interpret.
Yeah. I have heard of this, and actually I've tried, like, basically my nightly ritual is I will create a little story for myself before I go to sleep. And I've tried, like, I can't seem to, in my mind, have like a POV imagination thing. Like,
oh.
I can't be like, look down, there's my feet, look up, there's the sky. I can only seem to imagine other people doing things like, or me doing something in front of me, which has been a weird, like, I thought I would be able to do that, but
yeah,
but it's really hard actually. So that's an imagination exercise you can try. Try imagining yourself walking through the woods and seeing things there. It's harder than you think.
Yeah. Because your imagination is always as a third party.
Out-of-body
experience watching yourself do stuff.
Probably says something about me, really deep and psychological.
Yes, absolutely. Because you're deep and rich. Huh. Such an interesting thing. I don't know if you've ever listened to the podcast Script Notes with John August and Craig Mazin, but they were talking with a screenwriter who has no visual imagination. And the both of them, as writers, have really, really rich ones. And so it was an interesting conversation. And then they were talking to another screenwriter who is blind. And so for a screenwriter who has never seen things in their life, to then write stories that are told in a visual medium was such an interesting conversation to think through. I'm interested in whether or not people can actually develop a visual imagination. Yeah.
And that's kind of what I've been trying to do too, because I feel like it would help me tell stories better.
Yeah.
I remember I actually tried, I was sitting with some people and tried to describe to them this imaginative exercise. And there was this very awkward pause. And then someone was like, "That was a really weird thing to say, Kyla." And then they just moved on. Oh, I thought it was kind of cool and interesting, but I guess I am alone in that opinion in this particular group of people.
I see that you do not value this wavelength, or at least you don't recognize it for what it is.
No, I was going to start, like, I was going to expound on how actually I find it easy to imagine how things feel, like in my walk through the woods, could totally imagine like running my hand across a tree or something. And that was very easy for me. But anyway, I wonder too if I could develop it into something beyond my ability at this point.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, okay. Let me know how those exercises goes. I'll let you know if I try it out and what I come up with.
Awesome. Sounds good.
Okay. Oh yeah. You were talking about basically being a data scientist about your own work. Such a good practice.
I have pie charts and everything.
That's stellar. And then you're able to look through and actually see the allotment of time, the investment of time in different things, and then make decisions about changing that.
Yeah.
Have you made any really big changes informed by that data? Or have they been like little tiny like course corrections that have made a difference?
Well, it's kind of similar. So I kind of have approached this similarly to how I approach my money. Like, I have a hard time making a budget, but I do record everything.
Yeah.
So it's always kind of in a retrospective.
Yes.
And then I actually do have a hard time making like a concrete plan based on the data so far.
Yeah.
But I think like the nearest example was this month I've done a lot of teaching. And I looked at my pie chart and I noticed that I spent about 5% of my time doing actual studio time. And I was like, this is not right. Yeah. I hate this. And so from that, I was like, I'm going to just start doing some sketchbook time every day now. And, which I have. And then that's been really helpful. And then that might fade away later. Like I never really have like my plans kind of ebb and flow, I guess. But I was able to look back and be like, wow, I spent 50% of my time doing teaching prep and then like 20% of my time teaching and then the rest of the time doing like marketing and business. And I hate that. And and like, I'm supposed to be an artist.
Yeah.
So time to make time for the making of art or else I'll lose that. Like, you know, like it doesn't, you have to keep that stuff up and keep practicing or else you do lose something.
Yeah.
Lose your momentum and it's hard to pick it up again. So
yeah.
Yeah.
Truly. I love that you're able to retrospectively look at a true snapshot of what has actually happened mm-hmm. and make a decision based on that. Because you can compare that snapshot with your, you know, subjective impression of how the last month has gone. Like you could feel gross and unfulfilled, and then you could look at it and say, oh yeah, 5% of the time being an artist, no wonder.
Yeah, exactly.
That's so good. Yeah, you're, I would love a copy of your spreadsheet.
Yeah.
And I'd love to try it out.
Yeah, it's been really helpful. As long as I remember to put, like, enter things. You'd think you would remember what you did the day before, the next, when you think about it the next day. Mm, no, it's always gone forever.
Makes sense. Oh, man. So thinking about something being gone, a project, when it's completed and then released, that can be a tricky threshold to cross. That can be an even trickier threshold to know when to cross. What have you learned about recognizing when a project has to be done, is done, or is done enough to close the door on?
Well, most of my projects like that I've finished have been for other people, and I know they're done when I have all the money that they give me. So that's been pretty easy.
You're full of practical answers.
Yeah, I'm kind of like, even just thinking about the way I've been answering your questions, and I'm like, oh my gosh, like this is all very pragmatic. But just so
it
funny.
It can keep the very loose, free-flowing artistic spirit that I know is within you mm-hmm. in a healthy fence.
Yeah.
A place for it to run and be free.
You know, to be honest, like, this is a bit of a sidetrack, but like freedom without guidance is just chaos and you don't actually make anything. So I have worked really hard, especially in the last 4 years, to become a person who can be my own structure person, since I do work alone and don't have any like accountability per se, like of people like right there. So that part of me, like the free creative person, actually gets to accomplish things and like, and make them real. Yeah, and I think that to answer your question about like, when do you know that it's completed? Mm-hmm. I'm not totally sure what that'll look like for my upcoming story. I think that's why, one of the reasons why I want to plan it all out from beginning to end, so that I'm not caught in the eternal serial trap. Like, no one piece life for me. One piece isn't, for all you listeners out there who don't know what that is, it's an eternal anime.
A never-ending story.
It will never end. It's very difficult to get into for that reason. Anyway, but like I always have liked stories that have an arc, like Full mm-hmm. Metal Alchemist would be an anime example that had a mm-hmm. very defined arc, very satisfying to enjoy. Cool. And then when it comes to like the, like, when will I know that it's done? Like when it's printed? I don't know. I'll have to build like, or when it's just out on the internet, when I... Yep. Have a certain amount of people following me. I'm not sure. That's all kind of future stuff and it's difficult to plan for, but yeah.
When you get to that point, it'll be so interesting to hear what you notice in the project that precedes the, okay, I'm hitting publish on the website. I'm hitting mm-hmm. print, on the printed version. I'm closing these files and letting them stay in this previous year. I'm not bringing them mm-hmm. forward. It'll be interesting to hear you describe when you know it's like, well, good enough to actually hit publish.
Yeah.
Because you're right, those things will close the door, but you still get to choose before that. When am I closing the door?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know that for the artists that I follow and love, I only recently started being aware of how printing actually works and like most of them use Kickstarter and that kind of stuff to mm-hmm. get a certain amount of books printed and sold. And then they never print again because usually the momentum doesn't last for you to be able to justify a second printing, which is really sad for like a fan who comes in late. because I want to have all the printed books, but they don't exist anymore. So, I would imagine that probably a final button on the thing would be doing one printing, and then everybody would be like, that was awesome. And then it probably will end after that. Like, just probably, unless it becomes an international sensation, which would be surprising, but cool.
But cool. Oh. Never closed to that possibility. well, I, with you, remain open to that idea becoming true for your thing. I'm looking forward to reading.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to seeing what you make.
Me too. Well, I've been reading it myself every day, and I'm like, it's pretty okay. So I'm looking forward to sending it to my test audience soon, and seeing what they think, if they have any cool ideas.
Oh, that's fantastic. Good for you. Kyla, I have loved this so much. It's shocking to me that the time has passed as quickly as it has.
I knew this would happen.
I did too, but before I let you go, I have one more question for you. What is saving your life these days? It might be a practice or a routine or something you're reading or watching or people that you meet with. What's giving you life?
Ooh. I would say one thing that's been really life-giving for me is for this Easter season, I've set up a weekly kind of art club type thing for people kind of in preparation for Easter. It's kind of based on the Stations of the Cross, and basically I've invited people to come and make their own things, and then we all kind of share ideas, and just having that artistic community around with people like being able to not only have my own ideas about a concept, but to remember the richness of resources when it comes to other people's thoughts and ideas has been really neat. Like, I had a thought about how to portray one of the Stations of the Cross. And then one of my friends came up and she was like, Kyla, I've been thinking about sewing a garment to represent all the Stations of the Cross. And I'm just like, sewing a garment? It's amazing. And then we just have this great conversation. And it kind of reminds me, like, something that I've been kind of meditating on is that art and creativity in a lot of ways is simply like a vessel for human relationships and the exchange of ideas and care for one another. Yeah. And books and songs and stories give opportunity for the exchange of people's ideas to one another. And I just think that's so worthwhile. Like, a book won't last forever necessarily. Like, there's been thousands of books that have been made and have disappeared. And we don't know about them. And that can feel really discouraging. However, if anything that I make, any function or like event or book or illustration, if that gives an opportunity for something spiritual to happen between my work and a person or two people or me and some people, then that kind of thing I think is really worthwhile. And so that's been something that's been really giving me a boost lately.
I love that. That's great. Thank you for sharing. And thank you, everyone, for listening today. If you enjoyed this conversation, leave us a rating wherever you're listening and share it with someone who you think may like it as well. You can find me on Instagram at Timothy Lenko and at Timothy Lenko Music. Kyla, where can people find you and follow your work?
Well, I have a website. It's kylart.ca. It's kylaert. .ca.
Yeah, we'll put that in the show notes so people can easily click.
Yeah, and then Instagram is Kyla Wiebart. That's my...
Beautiful.
Yeah.
That's excellent. So yes, give Kyla a follow and check out what she's got going on. So I'll be back in just 1 week with a brand new episode. If nothing changes, I'll be speaking with an author whose books have come to mean a lot to me. Until then, thanks for listening. Bye.
Bye.